everybody. This is Kate.
And this is Alan.
From ReverseThieves.com. And welcome to the monthly podcast where we still haven't made any decisions about anything. So, you know, we're just winging it a little bit.
Yeah, I think we were going to originally do the manga in review for the decade. But instead, we're going to go a little easy and satisfy a need that I think people have been missing. So we're going to talk about the new season, kind of like almost as if we took all our SWAT reviews and put them in one podcast.
Yeah, I think, you know, I do feel like of all the things that we have done in the past, I think that's what we get the most requests about, which I really appreciate. And since I can't actually decide, like, do I want to change the format of this podcast? Do we want to do it differently? I don't know. So I feel like I'm just going to keep putting it off as long as I can. And we'll just keep doing episodes that are sort of have like this big overarching theme. That way I don't have to decide.
Like next month we could just do movies that we've seen.
Right. And we can still do manga of the decade. So basically, until we get to the point where we don't have a big topic to talk about, this is just going to be what happens. Yeah, winter 2020 anime season. So haven't done this in a while. I didn't actually take notes about any of these shows like I normally would. So let's see how much I actually remember.
It might be any show that we're like, might be telling.
I mean, I definitely know no one's name. I mean, even when I take notes, I often don't know anyone's name, but just up front, don't remember anybody's name. And we didn't watch, I would say, as much as we might normally, because there was a lot of good stuff that we were really interested in, so I didn't feel like I had to explore. I don't know, it wasn't as much like, oh, I don't know what's gonna be good. So I think we stuck a little bit more towards
not risky stuff. I think I was the only one who had us watch something that was a little,
I mean, we did watch Plunderer, Al. Well,
like,
on Al's recommendation, everybody. Huge fan.
Man, I will say, one, I don't pick the shows anymore. It's Kate. And two, there was a lot of Plunderer around Otakon and Anime NYC. It's definitely a show they're pushing. And also, I'm a little scared. Now, let's go right into it, Kate.
Yeah, let's do it.
I am a little scared because every time I go on to Funimation to watch
anything,
say, Fate, Plunderer is always the show they're like trying to get me to watch. And I'm wondering if it's A, because Funimation maybe just co-pro'd it, or, you know, we're hoping it's the big thing and they just keep pushing it. Or B, is it actually just popular? Or C, a little bit of A and B?
I mean, it's a thirsty show, and it's super thirsty, and I don't know if you heard about this, Al, but the internet, and especially anime fans, pretty thirsty lot. So I feel like it's not really that shocking that it's popular.
And as we said and we discussed it, I wonder how much, if it is popular, it's going to be one of those shows that, like, the kids who don't drop out in, like, 5 or 10 years look back and, like, oh, man, why did I like Plunderer again?
I think that's a good call. So many things about this show. So, on the surface, I feel like one of the outward appearances of it is sort of, like, hot guys and hot girls, in theory. But the plot itself is so dumb and convoluted that, and the dudes that appear in the first episode are like terrible human beings. So I don't feel like there's any joy in that.
It really, really, really feels like they want that main dude to be like this Vash the Stampede character. Like, oh, this archetype really works well. And like, they have like a bunch of the superficial ideas of what that is, but none, like, no idea why that character works.
Also, he's a pervert. I find it hard to imagine women enjoying that character, like, for the most part, just because it's like, he begins the show by attempting to look up this woman's skirt, because he's, you know, swimming in this, like, pool where people sort of cool their feet or whatever. And, like, that's where we start. And, like, I don't feel there's, like, a lot of... He gets, like, yelled at, but not in a way... You know what I mean? Like, no one cares that this is happening. They pretend to care, but no one actually does. And also, guys, the numbers... Okay, so okay. People have numbers on a part of their body. I know you guys are going to be super shocked that the women in this series... have them in fairly risque places. I know, it's weird. They make no goddamn sense at all.
Because technically, everybody has, like, a thing that they do to make their numbers go up.
Like, the thing that they're best at, right?
Yeah. It's almost...
Vaguely...
I'm going to use the weirdest example.
Great.
But bear with me for a second. It's like everybody in this world has a My Little Pony cutie mark, which is, you know, the mark that when you get it, it's like what you're best at. But it's rated. So one character, they own a restaurant, and every time they serve a meal that somebody likes, their, like, little thing goes up. And then another person, the main girl... hers is every mile she's walked. It's really weird. And so, like...
it's like a really intense Fitbit, I was just going to say.
But also, it seems like... and I guess this is supposed to be part of the inequality of the world. Certain people get, like, a ton of points for doing whatever their thing is. And other people just get a measly amount. And so, theoretically, if you can become a very high-class individual, if you have a easy thing, or at least something that is easy for you, and it gives you a lot of points, whereas, you know, you'll be a hard luck person if you have, like, a hard-to-do thing that only gives you a little bit of points.
But also, you can bet your points and gamble your points away to other people, and those points are then added to their scores whatever.
You can lose points if you do it badly. Like, if that lady serves a meal that's bad.
How do you walk a mile badly? Does she walk backwards? Does she sit for a long time and she loses points?
Kate, I think we were joking while we were watching the episode. Like, does she lose points if she just, like, stays at home and doesn't do any traveling for a day?
Yeah, I just...
The other thing is, if someone has more points than you, you have to do whatever they say.
Which, again, just seems random and arbitrary. And, like, why would you? Two... if that person's thing that they are good at is, like, juggling spoons, and the thing that you're really good at is stabbing people with knives, why would you listen to the person? I don't know. Like, they're just, like, this doesn't... like, I feel like the system... I normally don't care about systems, and I try to ignore them in these scenarios, but this is just too dumb.
Well, theoretically... both people have to accept a duel for it to work. That's why that dude with the fake star is so like, ah, you challenged me to a duel then, when the girl challenges him to a duel.
But there's still the like hierarchy of, if somebody's number is higher than you, you have to do what they say.
Well, the dumbest part of this whole dumb episode was that at first I thought it was magically enforced, but that dude had a fake tattoo and all this stuff.
Oh no, it was like a sticker.
Yeah. So
what's there to enforce the system at all? Yeah, like, that why wouldn't question. You just lie all the time? Like, why wouldn't you draw the number? Why wouldn't you say you were good at, like, I don't know, X, Y, Z?
Well, and
like,
okay, and this is me fucking doing way too much heavy lifting for this show. But if you lose all your points, if you go to zero or under, like, evil demons drag you away. So I wonder if it's one of those things where if people catch you, they can, like, report you and lower. And so basically, if you are number cheating, then you'll get dragged down by the evil spirits. So that's why, that would be my only guess of why more people don't cheat.
Except, guys, the main guy has, like, a negative number, but he's also like a triple star or some crazy bullshit.
Well, if you have a mat, you can, items can have numbers. So if you have an item that has a huge amount of numbers, well, that's why the girl got that like sphere from her mom, because the sphere, she eventually finds out, has like a bajillion points that her mom gave her.
Guys, this show's dumb.
Yeah, no, it's just, everything about this system just seems to be designed to make an excuse for these dumb fights, as opposed to, it's an interesting world that also has, like, potential, like, then is well set up so you could have fights. It's very much a cart, putting the cart before the horse, and it just, the show was already dumb and just kind of bleh.
And very fan service-y in such a boring way. And of course, like, there's like a creeper dude, a second creeper in this first episode who like tries to trick the girl who's been traveling, who's also insanely naive, even though she's been walking through towns for 5 years or whatever the fuck.
Also, like, what's weird is she's traveled like so many hundreds of miles, yet she knows nothing about the world. Because it kind of makes sense that she would, like, at first it makes sense because they say that she grew up sheltered. Fine. But then they make it that she's been traveling for years, so she never interacted with anybody.
Never.
Up until this point. If she had, like, started with Ed, she only had, like, 10 points because she just left home after that incident with her mom, the story would make more sense, but it doesn't because she's been traveling for years and yet has no idea how anything works.
It's bad. So we started with the worst thing that we watched.
This is, I think Kate, when we watched it, put it best. This is not the worst thing we have ever seen, but it is the worst thing we have seen in quite a while.
That we have subjected ourselves to. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of terrible things that I didn't have us watch in previous seasons.
Oh, Kate, one last question before we move on. Because I just thought of the most recent show that might give this show a run for its money. What was worse, Irregular at Magic High School or this?
Well, let's see. I guess Irregular at Magic High School has incest.
Mm-hmm.
And it also has, like, weird political, like, things that end up happening in it, which I have never seen, but
like, apparently it goes like super objectionist. the whole, what's her name? Ayn Rand.
Yeah, so it's like, I think that's overall worse. This is just dumb. Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, Plunder is just poorly designed. Like, there's actual, like, deep scheme in, like, Irregular Art. Okay, so, other than Irregular Magical High School, one of the worst things we've recently seen.
Okay, so let's go in a different fantasy direction, like, completely all the way around, with Somali and the Forest Spirit. So, also, by the way, I call this in my head Somlier every single time. I'm like, what is that? It's like a Somlier show? And it's like, that is not what this is. But in my brain, it is. So this is about a golem in a forest who finds a little human child and decides that he's going to leave his, like, valley area and try to reunite this child with her parents. And it's a world so far, it's a world that doesn't have any humans in it. It's like a monster world that they've been traveling in. And, like, humans are super rare and, like, not very often seen. And maybe are slaves?
Well, humans come from a different continent. And they came here and they lived with the monster races in peace for a while. But eventually war broke out and the monsters found out that humans were tasty. So, as far as the golem...
The humans were assholes.
Yes.
So
the monsters have, like, multiple reasons not to like humans and to just eat and or exterminate them on sight. And so the golem is either trying to find a place on this continent where there are still humans in good standing, or get her back to her home continent, depending on, whichever he can find first.
And he disguises her as a little, like...
Minotaur girl.
And the golem himself has no feelings or emotions, when he leaves the forest, like, that's sort of how he is built. But, it's very much a found family, father-daughter type of story. And the little girl thinks of the golem as her father. She calls him that as they're traveling. And so far, we've watched about 3 episodes or so. And... it's a very gentle show, so it's not quite slice of life, because they are traveling, they have a destination, there's a goal, there's some tension because the golem's body is deteriorating, and they have, like, a finite lifespan, so to get there, to a point.
And theoretically, if the girl is discovered, there could be some major problem. Like, in the first episode, things almost go badly, but they get out of it. They've met various people of different dispositions, but there is definite potential for action if they want there to be some.
I feel like it's more... would be drama. That's my feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I really like about this show is, one, it's a pretty nice father-daughter story that is not creepy and doesn't feel like it's going to become creepy in any way. And two, I feel like the world is really well realized. Like, I feel like the magic really comes through when they're traveling, in the environments, in the other characters that they meet. I really like the magic and the feeling of the magic in the story.
Yeah, I feel most of this story is just you finding out about how this world works and the people and the cultures that live on this continent using these two people on a road trip as your kind of point of view, or like, you know, to have a through line and not just be like basically an anthology series.
Also, the little girl is super cute, and the golem has like a super creepy eye. It really freaks me out. The eye is usually not visible, but when it becomes visible, I have to look away. So I feel like it's got a good sense of the monstrous while also being very cute.
I'd say it's a little more cute and discovery than, say, the Ancient Magus' Bride, which definitely airs a little more towards the, you know, kind of underlying creepiness and unsettling. But, yeah, as Kate said, it's not like the Little Lives in the Forest manga that I've been reading. It's like totally slice of life adventure in this fantasy world.
But it is very slow. I mean, it still has a pretty slow pace to it.
Yeah, it's not like they're, oh no, someone's found out she's a human. We've got to fight, you know, three war tanks.
I mean, I think there's potential for them to find out she's a human and the golem may have to sacrifice him. I mean, I feel like the story is leading to a pretty melancholy ending. So if I think that that's kind of obvious. So, or seemingly, maybe things will change along the road. But also, I don't know. I didn't look to see if this is like an ongoing story or whatnot. So who knows where we're going to end up with it. But I really recommend it. And I feel like it's the closest to slice of life that I like to generally come. So I feel like it's, like I said, it's not quite there, but like it is still a pretty slow-paced story.
And there are different elements of slice-of-lifiness. It's just not strictly a... The best analogy I could think of is it's a little more Kino's Journey, because, you know, they stop in a different place.
Everyone in that town is a horrible person and should die. Oh, wait.
Not once again, kind of like my analogy to Ancient Magus' Bride. It's not as underlyingly disturbing.
It's not that dark. So, yeah, I feel like it's the kind of show that really specific audiences will really, really enjoy. And I think other people will just, like, totally fly under the radar.
Yeah, no, but I think also just the nice, lush art design really helps make the show visually interesting and, like, kind of upset maybe some of the boredom that certain audiences might have with the slice of life. I mean, I watch slice of life shows more than you, so I have a higher tolerance for it. But I definitely think that the fantasy makes it a little lower bar of entry. Quick one. I just wanted to get out of the way since I've watched a few episodes of it. I watched the new Madoka Magica record, which is the side story of Madoka based on the mobile game. So, it's set in the same world as Madoka, I think, post the end of the series. They still have brief seeds, so no. So, it is some indeterminate time. I'm not fully sure what time it is set in, but it's definitely a side story, but we have seen at least one regular Madoka character. And so it's set with new magical girls, and it's in this other city that a bunch of magical girls have received this dream that if they come to this one particular city, they can be saved from their doomed fate. And it turns out that not only are there witches, there are these rumors that act like witches, but they don't drop grief seeds, but they're also not as deadly as witches, and they seem to have some greater context. And so the main girl is come to the city to investigate this rumor of being saved, and she's also looking for her missing sister that she seems to have somehow wished away part of her memory of her. And so she's trying to track her down. And so, yeah, so you have her teaming up with these other magical girls and looking for kind of the answer to both of these mysteries, which somehow lie in this strange city. I will say that it really feels very season one Madoka visually. So far, it seems a little more hopeful than the utterly kind of grim dark that is the first season of Madoka. We'll see how much that remains the case as the series goes on. There is potential that, especially when some of these mysteries start getting solved, that, nah, it is as grim as the original. I will say that the show does a pretty good job of not feeling like it's based on a mobile game and being too obvious about it. There are one or two little things that might hint, but overall they do a pretty good job of like cutting to the interesting bits of the story and cutting out all the filler stuff. I've noticed that like now with Grand Blue and Fate Grand Order, some of these mobile games, especially if they have more story in them, have been doing a better job of actually like telling a story that is actually a decent anime story and not just like a, well, I guess this is a mediocre commercial for the game it's based on. I still say the king of it is Rage of Bahamut, but that I think was a very special corner case. But I feel at least now they're putting out some of these shows that are entertaining. And Madoka generally seems like, from what I've seen so far, like a pretty good successor to the original series, especially since the fan base was very divided over that movie. This seems like a little bit more of a return to something that would make all the fans of the original at least willing to stick around.
I'd be interested to know what the fandom looks like now, and yeah, also just that there's, I know there's about 10 million spin-off manga, you know, there's like all these manga series about it, which I don't know anything about either, but just interesting. I wonder if it's been long enough, as we mentioned in our Decade in Review, that people might be coming to Madoka for the first time through this. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's also one of the reasons they're putting a little more time into it.
I will say, now that you mention it, it does not ever assume that, the anime does not ever assume that you've played the mobile game, but it very much assumes you have watched the original anime.
Oh, well, then I don't know.
Because, yeah, there's, like, no references that I don't get from not playing the mobile game. But I'm, like, now that you mention it, I'm keenly aware now that there are several things that they do not explain. And they just assume you have seen the original Madoka anime. And would, like, totally be like, what? Ooh? So that is an interesting part of it. That, like, if you came in fresh, I think you'd be kind of lost.
So speaking of magical girls, it's the new year, so that means we have a new Precure series to start. We're working on finishing the last one, not because it wasn't good, but because the subs stopped coming out. So, but in any case, we've moved on to check out the new one in time for this seasonal review.
And this one is called Healing Good, kind of like Feeling Good. Healing Good.
Healing?
Healing. Like
healing.
Because it's supposed to be like Feeling Good. But instead you make heal instead of feel.
You don't make heal.
It's a pun. Bombard you with enough puns that you've kind of gone pun blind.
Yeah, pun blind.
But it's supposed to be a pun.
And it's about Nodoka, who has just recently moved to town, and she's a transfer student, and her family, you know, has moved into a new house, and she's exploring the neighborhood. Shockingly, some weird things are going on, and there's some, you know, magical mascot fairies swirling about.
It seems that she has some kind of medical condition, and that's one of the reasons her parents moved her to this new town, because it's known for, like, the healing properties of the waters there, and it, like, it has a, like, a medical community.
I thought it had more of, like, a, not like a medical community, but more like a
clean air and, like, good,
or like medicinal, you know, like healing spa, you know, sort of thing. Like, I don't know if it was, you know, like, as opposed to, like, hard science medical.
Yeah.
Didn't it seem sort of that way?
Like in the Victorian era when they'd send you out to the country to get the good vapors.
Yeah, it felt like maybe a little like that, as opposed to, like, more technical. And she meets a couple, she, like, is exploring the town, and she runs into a couple of, you know, girls who are kind to her, but also just kind of a little bit, like, you know, she's just exploring, I guess. Mm-hmm. They're weird. They're other Precure, obviously. I mean, it's not like rocket science to watch the show.
Plus, I feel like at least the first batch of Precure, they make pretty obvious. It's usually like the mid-season Precure is the one they make you wonder about.
It's very true. And this time, the mascots are animal, like, more acutely animals, as opposed to, like, mysterious animal,
like,
mishmash.
Yeah, just like, I'm a cute mascot character.
Right. So we have a rabbit, we have a penguin, and we have a cat. Or is it a tiger? I don't remember. But
it is definitely some kind of feline. But Kate, you forgot the most important thing, which is, but they are escorting a princess dog.
Oh my god, how did I forget that? I have a lot of questions about the kingdom. Like, because the queen is also a dog, and she speaks words.
Mm-hmm.
But the princess, who's also a dog, doesn't.
But they have a collar, so that she can, like, bark and the other mascots can understand her and interpret for her.
Maybe the queen was just wearing a necklace and I didn't notice? I don't know. Anyway, I was, like, mildly confused about why all the other animals in this show or animal mascots or magical animals can speak, so, but the puppy princess can't.
My general headcanon was that she was a, like, the rest of them were supposed to be, like, kid, like, the other three were supposed to be kid mascot characters. The queen is obviously an adult mascot character, and the puppy princess is supposed to be like a baby, and so the only reason they can communicate her is with this magical device that basically interprets her baby talk.
I see.
Because they really, like, for the last few episodes, they really like to have baby mascots. So that was my interpretation. Mm. It was continuing, like, the baby mascot. Especially, like, the not, like, star one. Like, the one that's more like the companion ones tends to be a little older. And it's, like, the center one tends to be, like, a baby.
Well, then, that might be sort of where this is going. Except it's way more fun because it's a dog. And so Noroka finds the dog is, like, basically the dog gets sick when the world or the environment, is something bad is happening in the environment. And, of course, the bad guys in this are, I'm thinking of the bad guys as, like, the evil, you know, in Dr. Planet and Captain Planet.
Yeah.
And like, whatever, the Toxic Squad. So the dog needs help, and they're like on this, she is like on this mount, is it a mountain or in the park or whatever?
It is a park.
And no one else is helping, and so Noroka, despite her sort of like physical limitations, you know, pursues trying to help, and she turns into a Precure and fights the bad guys, and she turns into Cure Grace, and we meet the first minion of the evil climate. They're like coal rollers of Precure, I guess. I don't know. And he's, I can just tell that he's going to be popular, and he's kind of popular with me because he's like very like disconnected from it, but also has just great fashion sense. So
he's definitely the hot guy of the bad guys.
Occasionally you have one. It just happens. So, you know, we'll see. He's just like, is a bad guy, but also doesn't seem to really care about doing any of it. So he's very lazy.
It's like a punch card. He's just like, all right, I'm just doing this 9 to 5.
Yeah.
I just collect my paycheck at the end of the week.
I was trying to remember how he created the monster.
I don't think we've seen it. It just seemed to be like disease and like pollution based. Or did he like just, I think he found some like natural piece in the environment and then he like injected it with like the poison pollution disease and it like twisted into the monster. All the like natural things have little spirits, so he like,
oh right, I forgot that part.
And he like twisted, he like injected it with like the poison pollution disease. And
yeah. So as I was just mentioning that we forgot is that, yeah, the environment or like pieces of the environment, like as a whole, have little like anthropomorphized souls or something. Like,
so it's
like
very Shinto.
It's like, yeah, like, so like this field of flowers has like a little, I don't know, little guardian
mm-hmm.
that can be corrupted by the bad guys and used for nefarious purposes. So I thought that this show actually felt a little bit different than what we've been seeing lately, which I kind of liked. Or a little bit different for Precure. I don't know. It was like, so there's like obviously an environmental angle to it. And the way that like the bad guys are interacting with the world and the little environmental souls and like the cleansing of the planet. I don't know. I thought it was just a little bit different. You know, I feel like more often than not, they're kind of pulling from like humanity's
mm-hmm.
inner turmoil, which like we are causing the environment. So I'm sure that will come up. But like, I just thought it was a little bit different than typical.
Also, the fact that the main character is like, not like usually, if anything, the main girls are of tip-top health, other than like a few exceptions, like Tsubomi and Heartcatch. So it is interesting to see a main character who, but also there's the whole thing of like she becomes like super healthy and like doesn't have to worry about her sickness when she's in her pre-cure form. So that's obviously going to be a dynamic going on. One thing I just wanted to mention was the main voice actress for Cure Grace is Ao Yuki, who is super famous for wanting to be on Precure. She like grew up with Precure, and in fact she's a voice actress for a character in Grand Order that she like petitioned to get her to be that character, to be a magical girl in that series, because she always wanted to be on Precure. So it's kind of interesting that she finally got to be on her Precure, because in a way she's just been like over the years subtly lobbying to be on Precure, just dropping everywhere she goes, man, I'd love to be a main character on a Precure show.
It's big. It's a big gig, so it's nice. And I think, you know, the first episode, I really liked it. So, like I said, it felt a little bit different than what we've seen lately. So, like, it makes me pretty excited and interested to see the handoff of this once we finish Star Twinkle to Healing Good. I'm excited to see how serious it gets about the environmentalism.
Yeah, each Precure kind of like unfolds and reveals itself as it goes on, so it'll be interesting. This one plays out.
I'm just going to put this here because I don't think we really need to talk about it, but it's just worth saying. Of course, we're watching the new Haikyuu. I was telling Al before this. I was like, what is it? Aimed for the top? That's not it. To the top. I'm glad it's back. It's great. You know, happy for it to be here. It's one of the few from that as like consistently getting new seasons, and the manga's still running. So it's like, you know, I feel like it's going to keep it in the mind. I hope that it brings back some of that Haikyuu excitement and fandom, so.
So, Kate, one quick question. Does that mean that season 4 of Haikyuu, is season 5 going to be a side story about Nekoma called Die Buster? That kind of, like, fills in some gaps in between the ending of this season.
Well, I thought that was that OVA that we saw.
So that's the Die Buster.
That's right. So I think I was about to say something, have no way of knowing. I was like, the show everyone's talking about this season, I don't actually know this, but I assume it.
Kate, I was actually going to say the same thing, and we did not coordinate this, but I feel like this is the show that like 90% of the people, at least, it might not be everybody who's talking about it, but I feel like 90% of the people who watch, who listen to this podcast, probably are watching this show. And we are just probably confirming what they already think and know about the show. But let's get it out of the way.
So we are, of course, talking about Keep Your Hands Off Aizouken. And it's about three high school girls who want to form an anime club, not to just enjoy anime or be fans of anime, but to create their own anime. So they're, one of them is a concept artist, and one of them is kind of like, I guess you could call her the keyframe artist, or like the one who can actually draw more animation than...
Well, I thought like people was her. Like,
oh, yeah, like character art. And yes. And then the, I don't know, producer, you want to say? That I feel like she's the person who...
Slash enforcer.
Yeah, can't draw or, like, contribute, really, except to, like, keep things on schedule and, like, try to make things happen.
She's also the one who kind of cares about anime the least.
Right. Like, from a fandom perspective. And the this is also the first TV series from Masaki Yuasa's studio, and he is also directing the series, so of course that makes it a big deal. And it has sort of his signature look to it, but I feel like it's a little more polished looking than some of his more like loose direction, like animation direction. And it also, I think, is sitting in that wonderful place where Lou Over the Wall kind of sits, where it's more of a family or like a young seeming show as opposed to a like a mindfuck show or something that's like very adult and sort of has some like undertones to it.
Well, I've mentioned in the podcast I have very mixed feelings about Yuasa as a director, but I always feel like when he has a solid story and then is somewhat fantastical with it and like goes off and flourishes but then has to return to a base, that's when I like him the most, and I feel this definitely has that feel because they have a solid story, a very kind of grounded story, but like at least a minimum once an episode they like, especially when the two big otakus of the three of them really start getting into stuff, things can go fantastical and over the top. And I think I like that because it feels like he can express himself, and I feel this feels a little more of a team effort. The team can express themselves in that moment, but it still has like a nice grounding to it all, which I think is usually when I like Yuasa and Science Saru the best.
I feel like over time, I have ended up liking more than I have disliked, mm-hmm. like as his library grows. And so I feel like I have a more faith in him or more interested in him than I would have been like a number mm-hmm. of years ago. And so I really love so much the way the imagination works in this story. And the way it is visualized, and it has such like a grasp of how creative mind works, I think, and how you kind of like go off on tangents and you and like the process of creating together, which I think is very exciting. And it's also interesting to see them, one, kind of realizing that animation is really hard. Like, mm-hmm. oh, shit. Like, this is way harder than I was thinking that it was going to be. But also persevering and really, like, wanting to do those things.
But at least the two artists have, like, a good grounding. It's like they've clearly practiced their art a lot. It's just they have like a bunch of training in what they really care about, but now they have to kind of like actually make something, and they realize kind of, you know, they were a frog in the well, as it were, and now they're exploring the larger world and actually, like you said, like, oh, now the rubber is actually hitting the road, and, you know, they realize how much harder it is. But, you know, they have that solid base, so they have a good place, you know, to overcome the trials, even though they are greater than they might have first assumed.
I also realized that we're making this sound really dramatic. And everyone in this show is kind of an idiot. They get into weird antics in every episode. They aren't necessarily like the smartest bunch. And they, you know, like, there's one, they have a viral, no, I guess it doesn't go viral, that video, but, like, it gets them in trouble. Also, they have to, like, con their, one of the teachers about what their club is actually about, and...
And the girl who's the character designer is a model, and so she's kind of famous, and her family doesn't really want her to do anything with anime because they feel like it would taint her, like, well-crafted kind of brand image they have around her. So she's kind of, like, doing this all kind of in secret at the same time.
And she only, you know, befriends these two other girls who are, you know, good friends in the first episode. And so we're getting to know her. Their advisor is pretty weird, but sort of believes in them. They are entering a contest to make, like, an animated feature. But also, right now, they're working on making a little short that can convince everybody to give them funding. I'm sure it's going to go perfectly fine. I'm also interested to see how much, if any at all, like, anything about the past anime club. Because they find all this equipment for a club at the school that was, like, also animating things. So, are we going to find it? I don't know. I'm just, like, kind of curious. Like, I don't feel like... We've watched, like, three episodes, so, like, I don't feel like it's fully revealed, like, exactly where it's going with it. So that's going to be interesting. And I think also how much we kind of learn about the production of anime. That's been something that's, you know, happened in multiple shows now in the last few years. Obviously, the most well-known being Shirobako and, like, you know, how will that contrast with this and whatnot? So this is, like, obviously a less professional level. This is really, really, like, fan level, first timers kind of thing. So
it's interesting because it's not, they have at least at this point some access to some more pro equipment, but they're still on a very fan level.
That's true. They do. I mean, man, that club has some stuff. That's why I want to know about them. I'm like, how did you guys afford that? So there's some, like, interesting possible stories there, I think. But yeah, I feel like this is kind of like the one to watch if you can only watch one for the season.
This one I just kind of watched on a whim. And just because I was like, all right, that name is weird enough that I'll give it a one episode watch. And so it's called Science Fell in Love, So We Try to Prove It. And it basically starts where there are these two grad students and, you know, they kind of have, like, a little bit of banter, you know, ribbing each other while they're working on papers they're about to give, and one of them basically confesses, the woman confesses the love for the man, and he's like, that's interesting, but can you prove that you love me scientifically? And so essentially it seems like now the rest of the series is these two trying to scientifically break down with numbers and the scientific method what love is, and everybody else in their kind of lab either cheering them along or, like, trying to figure out why they are so weird. Because there's, like, one girl who's definitely sciencey, but also definitely, like, the regular girl. And, like, she, like, is trying to get them to be, like, somewhat of a normal couple, but dragged along. And then you'll eventually meet the other weirdos who are just as kind of hardcore science-minded, and they just are more fascinated with the, like, can we solve the equation of love like these two fools? It's a weird little show. I think it really appeals to me because when I was in college, I was in a computer and robotics and engineering club. And if you know enough people like that, you realize that this show is very deliberately over the top, but you recognize the kernels of truth that they're kind of poking fun of / know all too well of how especially hard science nerds really, really, really like to believe that they can view the world 100% logically and through kind of the scientific method and the sciences, and like how they're above like the silly emotions and logical fallacies of the normal people, but it's clear that they're not. And so like half the thing is them having some innate bias or like prejudices, but them just trying to essentially science them and fact them away. So I guess that the show appealed to me just because I've known enough people who actually are more realistic versions of this that it's amusing, and it's very clearly written by people who like have some kind of science degree and thereby know this, or at least know people like that, and thereby it's definitely over the top, but it rings true at points.
I only watched the first episode of this. Al, I know you've watched some more. I felt like it almost felt like a one episode show for me. Like I was sort of like, okay, like I get the joke, and it wasn't that, like, it didn't there were definitely some really funny moments, but I also felt like the show was like clearly meant to have a lot of fan service of this the woman scientist, and so it was sort of like, okay. And the opening is also, I thought, was very interesting, which is also like Yuri Bait opening, which is like, is this relevant or is this just like
more of the
fan service stuff?
I do feel like if I like step back, I'm like, I'm probably just like passively enjoying or like ignoring a lot of the fan service. That's probably, what do you call it, much more of a barrier to Kate, but such is the difference in the harmony called gender.
I mean, I think it would be one of those things where I can enjoy a fan service show, especially if there's like equal opportunity fan service, but that is not, I don't feel like that's like the dude in here. As soon as I saw him, I was like, that dude looks like the creepy hentai pervert, like, on the train who gropes people, like, and he's like a little, like, when you see him up close, he's like slightly less than that, but it's still like, I don't know. So I feel like maybe if there was like a little more like equality in the fan service, I could like get behind it.
Is the good looking blonde guy who appears in the second episode and he sticks around a lot, like he's a little more prominent, but no. Though I will not deny, Kate, that when you call it, there are some very select camera choices.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas the guys don't get anything like that. So
I wouldn't say it's like super egregiously bad, though. So if like you're looking for like a slightly horny like romantic comedy, it's not like, like, oh man.
It's not like constantly on her tits or upper skirt.
Yeah, and there's not like massive amounts of bounce or I don't know, anything like that. But there's like there's clearly a point of view.
Yeah, no, there's just a very selective either like watching her walk with a wiggle or like focusing on her thighs. Like, it's not as subtle, it's nowhere as subtle as Flying Witch, but it's not egregious, but it is definitely not. You have to be pretty dense not to notice it.
Exactly. So I felt kind of like, it's okay. And there were, I will admit, though, there were some really funny bits. So, you know, your mileage may vary.
Yeah, definitely. It is, I think, like, if you know any kind of hardcore science people, you should, like, basically, like, maybe just test the first episode and see how much of everything you can tolerate.
So another show that I feel kind of on the fence on, like, I want to like it, but I'm kind of like, I don't know, do I totally like it, is Oda Cinnamon Nobunaga. So this is a show about Nobunaga and, like, many of the other historical figures of his period are reincarnated as dogs in the modern day, and they all have owners and whatnot, and they frequently meet up at the dog park. There's silliness to be had, and Nobunaga himself is a Shiba Inu, of course, named Cinnamon, and so you also have kind of his individual adventures with his owner, and then also, like, with the other dogs. So obviously this is a very serious drama.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of tragedy in it. And so, yeah, it's just about dogs. Kate,
do you think that the owner's friend, do you think that that idle guy noticed her in the crowd?
Maybe. I don't know. Yes? No?
Well, no, then it would be a series full of tragedy.
Oh, okay. I don't know. Yeah, like, it's very silly. I don't know, like, it's I don't know. Say something, Al. I don't know what to say.
I think the problem that you have with the show and what it is the humor is very varied. Like, there's kind of almost, like, three levels. There's the Warring State characters kind of goofily talk to each other. There's the dog antics, and then there's the mixing of the two, and all three of those have a very different comedic styling. Like, the ones where they're just, like, they're basically talking about themselves being, like, the reincarnation of the Warring States, it has a very much feel of, like, a Chibi Nobunaga series. Like, kind of like, we take the characters from, you know, the Warring States and make them silly and interact with each other. And then the dog show is kind of like a, once again, it's a very different humor, because it's kind of like, oh no, I've been reincarnated as dog and I have kind of dog problems. But that has a very, you'd agree with me, has a different feel of humor.
Yeah, like, I also think that while I know of the Warring States period and mm-hmm. I know, like, a little bit perfunctory about each of these characters, I feel like, you know, half of the humor really relies on you just, like, so knowing these historical characters because you've just through osmosis of, like, being, I school and things like that, I assume. I don't know. But, like, I feel like, so I don't feel like I'm getting all of that.
Well, I do also feel like in Asia in general, there is a certain, and there's a definitely equivalent here in the States, but there is a certain fandoms that, like, are totally into certain, like, time periods, either Three Kingdoms or the Warring States. And I feel like those fandoms, like, know those, both the historical and kind of the fantastical versions of those characters as much as any Star Wars fan would know that universe in detail, and not only knows all the history, but all the kind of in jokes and things like that. And, you know, you just don't, you either don't get that here, or you get it for different time periods or different things here. So we're always kind of a little bit like, both of us know enough to usually watch those shows, but like you said, we don't know enough to like truly grok those shows.
Well, especially if it's just like one line, you know what I mean? Like, it's like I don't know them well enough to be like, I totally get that one-liner or whatever. Or like, oh, they saw this thing. Ha ha ha. I mean, occasionally they explain the joke, which is the even worse thing to do in here. But like...
But it's not that level of so silly over the top that it doesn't matter, like Sengoku Basara.
Yeah, like, it's irrelevant. Like, and so I feel like the doggy parts are like... probably the most fun, but I don't know. I just feel kind of like I really want to like it a lot, because it's not as if we get a lot of dog shows. But
Ninja Girl and Samurai Master kind of strike me as the show that balanced that the best, but I think that show, the humor relied less on you knowing, like the storyline relied on the warring states, but the humor didn't. Whereas this one, the humor is a little more tied to you knowing the Nobunaga characters, which I feel like Samurai Master was more intent on teaching you that stuff. And and the humor was there as a separate thing. I think that one works a little better for people like us. So this show we watched separately, but I think, to borrow my roommate's phrase, one show feels very much kind of like an older shoujo, but in the modern age is Smile Down the Runway, which is about a young model who is very short, and thereby her father, who runs a modeling agency, is like, look, kid, I love you as my daughter, but give up. This is a industry that requires tall models, and you're a lovely looking girl, and you have lots of prospects in your life, but one of those prospects is not being a model.
Well, it's not being a supermodel who models on a runway in Paris, because it's a good distinction, because like Japan obviously needs models. They have models all the time. Obviously, they would still prefer you to be tall, but I think it's the specific type of modeling that she wants to do that makes it way more difficult. Because she gets offered
right
modeling jobs that are not like this high level type of thing.
But that's what her father's agency is famous for. So that's the top that she wants to aim for.
We're just gonna use it in everything.
In a parallel and related story, there is a young man who wants to become a fashion designer and make clothing, but he currently does not have the connections to do so, but is looking for a way into the fashion industry. Plus, his family's struggling, so he can't, you know, go and just afford tuition to a fancy fashion school.
And so they kind of meet up, and our heroine basically is like, I need to stand out in some way. Like, I need to show them that I... Because the whole, you know, they kind of talk about, like, the whole point is to show off the clothes to their best ability. Like, that's the idea of what she should be doing. So she's, like, kind of seeking out this way to look like the clothes are made exactly for her, and like to show it off and like to show her modeling skills by making the clothes look so amazing. And so he ends up designing an outfit for her, and basically it goes viral and everybody's like, oh, we want this outfit. And like another famous model like retweets it and is like, oh, I love this, you know. And so that kind of starts to get her on the radar. And because of this kind of team up of these two characters, she's able to just get a little bit of a chance at her father's agency. And at the same time, our designer is given the chance to apprentice for a famous designer who is kind of legendary for his prickliness. And the two of them are off to, like, you know, to see what they can make of themselves in these careers. And they're like kind of together in this path.
But it's also very clear that both of them are kind of always working with a handicap. She, you know, is trying for a position where everyone says that, you know, basically you're not tall enough, and he doesn't have a very... He has a very, like, self-taught education, and he's working with a bunch of people who basically don't want anybody who doesn't have the same kind of education that they've had.
And I think for him, like, I feel like the heroine, she feels like she's, like, knows what she wants, and I feel like he sort of knows what he wants, but he also sort of doesn't. And I think he's got a lot more, like, personal grappling to do, because he is used to sort of being a seamster? No. Tailor, I guess? I mean, he, like, makes clothes for people, and he really enjoys, like, the joy that that brings, but he's also kind of like, oh, can I do this when, like, my family needs me? Like, there's, like, I think a little more of, like, a conflict for him about how he is spending his time.
Plus, well, she, like, has grown up in this world, so she knows all the roadblocks that are coming at her before they hit her. It's her trying to find a way around them. He has no idea, and he will often run smack right into, like, a barrier that he didn't even know. And she only kind of has an idea of that world, so she can't, like she can maybe help him out sometimes, but that is not her area of expertise. So he has to do a lot of what we call it, trial by fire.
Yeah, that's a good point. So I've watched a couple episodes of this. I like it, but I'm not 100% sold on it yet. There's certain things I really enjoy about it, but I feel like it has a lot of good details. Like, I think it shows some understanding of the creative process. It shows some understanding of the fashion world, like the behind the scenes fashion world. So that it feels like research was done. So I like that. I also really love, this is so random, and I'm sure it's like this in the manga, which it's probably everywhere, but like when they do a shoujo flourish that would, like, in another series would be like sparkles or flowers or bubbles, in here it's like little sewing materials. So it'll be like some buttons and a needle and like some thread, and I'm like, yes, good job, guys. Like, just like little details like that make me really appreciate it. I feel like the animation is like a little not the greatest. And I feel like that's kind of unfortunate, because you want the clothes to look really, really amazing in a fashion series. And so I feel like sometimes they do and sometimes they don't.
It does seem to have the curse of the mid-level shoujo budget.
I kind of wonder. I know this manga is licensed by Kodansha. So I just kind of wonder, like, ooh, does it look like really, like, pristine, and in that setting, and in here it's kind of like an advertisement for the manga, and it's just like, well, it's just supposed to get you like super interested, and then, you know, go read.
Yeah, I remember, like, it's not as bad as I remember. A lot of people were very disappointed into Welcome to the Ballroom because the animation on that was not up to snuff, but that had dancing in it, which I think when the budget on that wasn't the greatest and the animation on that wasn't the greatest, it hurt that show a lot more. But it does kind of feel like in that same category where, like, this isn't, like, the greatest, like, best-selling manga in, you know, shoujo manga in Japan, so we're not gonna, you know, put our full resources into it, so you can kind of tell at times. But I think it doesn't suffer as much. But like you said, if they would put a little more into the fashion, it would probably, you know, help the show a little more.
And it's one of the few, obviously not a lot of shoujo series get animated, so it must be pretty popular. Mm-hmm. If they've decided to do this, so that makes me interested in it. I'm also not clear, I feel, from the first couple of episodes if there is a romance or not. Like, I'm not 100% sure if this is a romantic entanglement. So, like, I mean, thumbs up to yeah, it is, but I don't feel like that's 100% clear.
It almost, to me, and you can, feels like they're putting in situations and almost being like, so does anybody care about this? Or
just checking, taking the temperature of
yeah,
the room.
Yeah, it feels like she's almost waiting for, like, or whoever the author is waiting to see, wait, is this something that you care about and you want me to go into, or do you not care about this and you just want to see them talk about their careers? It feels to be almost like,
like, I'll do what the feedback tells me to. Yeah. Possibly. I don't know. Or it might reveal itself as the series goes on a little bit more. Like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm fine either way, but
it just seems like the seeds are there, but it doesn't want to commit to it.
So I think for this one, I might end up just picking up the manga and seeing from there. Because I do have an interest in it. I mean, this was one of the shows of the season that I was like, I'm really curious about this show.
I don't want to go too much into other materials, like, outside of what we watched. But I do know that there are two other characters, and I think we've met one of them, or at least the point I've watched up to, because I think there's another guy and another girl.
Yeah, like in the poster, yes. Or the promo art or yeah. Whatever, yes.
And I know they mentioned that there are four of them in, like, the little blurb when I was looking through the shows of the season, so it will be interesting. We've only, so far from what I've watched, we've only met the other girl. And we haven't, if we've met the other guy, it's, I missed it. But I'm curious to see what those two characters add to the mix. I think part of the show might, I feel like part of the show we have not seen yet, because those two characters definitely will add a different dynamic to the show.
So last but not least, we have two detective series to talk about. We would have three if Amazon or Netflix or whoever took that other, like, that third show. But anyway, we still have two detective shows to talk about, which makes me pretty excited based on, you know, our interests. So first up, I would say, is Case Files of Julia Richard. So this is a series about a jeweler named Richard. I know, you're surprised. And he has just recently returned to Japan or is staying for a prolonged, I don't know. He is only recently there, but he speaks Japanese, but he is not Japanese.
Yeah.
And our main guy who seeks him out has this ring from his grandmother that he has like a lot of guilt over its existence, and you find out kind of over the course of the episode why he feels that way, where his grandmother got it, and he basically wants to return the ring and sort of, because he feels like it's kind of like hanging over her spirit and his like family a little bit, and his mother's relationship with her, and you know, it's like pretty
not in like a supernatural like
no
curse way. I just wanted to
That's a good point.
Like Kate said, it's like definitely the incident around this ring totally soured his mother and grandmother's relationship to the point where they basically were two people who, what do you call it, just happened to be related to each other and no more than that. And since the son was kind of on good terms with both of them, now that his grandmother's passed away, he kind of was hoping to, like, you know, just maybe put some closure to that relationship as a tribute to his grandmother.
And so he meets Richard by kind of happenstance. He helps him out in a jam, and, you know, he's given Richard's card, and then he, you know, after he gets the card, he realizes that he was a jeweler, and so it, like, works out that he wants to, like, appraise this ring and, you know, kind of learn some things about it. And so this is really, like, the introductory episode to then what will be the series, because they're going to be, like, a team, and, like, at the end of the episode, Richard is like, hey, you should work for me. And the show has...
That was it, Kate. He just opened up a shop in Japan. He might have been there previously, but that's why he also hires the kid, because he needs a... Since he just is opening up the shop, he needs, you know, like some employees for the shop. And so one of his first, if not his first employee... will be the other character.
And I feel like it's a show with, like, light BL. We can call it, like, light BL, because I feel like nothing will ever happen, but it's there for you to pretend that it might. I don't know. That's the vibe I was getting from it, so.
Yeah. No, I definitely get... I didn't feel there was any, like, blatant teasing?
No, okay, yeah, maybe calling it BL, I don't want to say it's like queer baiting.
Yeah, because I feel like, especially since people are sensitive to that, it doesn't, it's just, there are two guys, they're very good looking, and they have a tight friendship, so it, like, conclusions will be drawn, but I don't feel like the show is deliberately, like, putting them in, like, romantic situations and then...
I think that that's fair. I feel like it's... They're Sherlock and Watson. So, mm-hmm. like, however you interpret them, mm-hmm. that's, like, whatever you can paste onto this.
And it is a show that if you want in your headcanon for them to be a couple... It is not hard for you to do. I don't feel like the show is like...
Playing into it.
Yes. But then with the intention of never paying that off.
That is a good point. At least so far. We've only watched one episode. We're going to watch more. I mean, I think we will. It seems like the type of mystery show, you know, where it's really kind of... It's kind of like a yokai show mm-hmm. where, like, a lot of yokai shows... It's really to, like, tell you the story of, like, this item or, like, this character's tragic past or whatever it is. And it feels like that's kind of going to be the crux of the mysteries in this show, is to just kind of facilitate us learning a little something about another character. And, like, it gives us a little personality of our leads and, like, we see how they react to things. But, like, it's kind of facilitating these, like, small little stories.
And then maybe, like, every, like... fifth or sixth story, it'll be like, my friend from college comes in and their story. So the main characters are integrated into it, but it feels like that'll maybe be every like fifth or sixth story, and all the other stories will be person we don't know at all comes in with this jewelry related story and we learn about this character. And then
would you classify that as like kind of like healing anime?
It is the formula that a lot of healing anime like. And two, no, this does feel very healing anime. I mean, I definitely got that vibe. But I don't think I've watched a healing... a lot of those isekai restaurant shows are like that. So I guess I haven't had one of those in a while. So I'm kind of in the mood for one of those shows. But no, it definitely does feel like a healing show.
Yeah, it doesn't strike me as a show where there's going to be like murder mysteries or some grandiose, overarching, dramatic plot.
I could see a Master Keaton style thing where like maybe like every like eighth story maybe has a little bit of a...
How long do you think the show's going to be out?
I just assumed it was like based on a long-running manga series, it feels like. And that this anime is just going to be like a greatest hits version. I don't know if that is the case, but that's what it felt like to me. So I just assumed there are like dozens of these and dozens
could
of
be,
these
that's
stories.
True.
And we're just going to get, so like maybe in this season we'll get one about a murder and there, you know, the other 10 will be, you know, much more like...
Well, I think, you know, it was like enjoyable enough and it's a detective show and it like, I feel like it's worth checking out. It feels like, even though I don't know, and Al is saying that it could change, it feels kind of like a low stakes
show. The series at the case at the end, like the finale, will be a big like bump.
Possibly, yeah.
Because I think they made some hints about like a syndicate or something.
Oh, I mean, that's true. I mean, you do have kind of the overarching idea that there are people who steal jewels and then sell them, like, on the black market or, like...
I thought that, like, a syndicate came up, though, at one point. It wasn't, like, a big thing, but it definitely seemed like a seed for...
Everything changes after the first episode, guys. It's, like, Yakuza-level... death. I mean, yeah, it everything changes. It gets real dark.
I just, once again, I assume that's like the finale episode.
No, I'm remembering now that, like, now that you said it, you're right, there was some...
I remember there was something in the show that like made me think that
it's breaking new ground. Yakuza healing anime, okay. And then the last show we want to talk about, I think probably the show I'm most excited about that we've watched. I don't know about you, Al, where you fall in the spectrum of everything we've watched. But ID Invaded is this mystery detective technology kind of series where... they are able to... I feel like it's a little psychopaths, and then, like...
It's sci-fi, but I was just about to say that psychopaths way, where it's definitely not hard sci-fi. It's definitely much more interested in exploring the ideas through... here's the science device that works through things.
So, and we don't fully, we've watched like, I think, 3 or 4 episodes, and so we don't fully know how all of the devices work and what each of them, you know, like every aspect of it, but.
And it's also very clear that at this point, the show doesn't want you to know certain parts of that, like part of the greater mystery is how these things work and the characters who are using them, their agency is very deliberately keeping not only people outside the agency in the dark, but the people inside the agency in the dark as well.
The story is about, this is like some near future where you can, at a crime scene or just any kind of place where something has occurred, you can gather particles that are kind of like memories of what has happened. And it might, the thing is though, you don't necessarily know always whose memories they are, because they could be various passersby, they could be the killer, they could be the victim. And they're using these particles, like there's an organization that basically like dives in. There's one detective who does the diving, and once he's in there, he can start to try to piece together certain things. And the whole organization is trying to find serial killers. That's like their goal. And
oh, but one of the important things to note is that when you dive into the memories, they have to keep your memory separate, so every time our main detective goes in, he only knows a few key facts. That he knows that he's a great detective, and he knows that he's in an artificial world. But beyond that, he has to kind of almost relearn how to use the device and how to figure out mysteries in the world. And each world is a little different depending on the type of particles, and the rules are different. So
and whoever's brain it is. You know what? I realized that I called this ID invaded, and it's obviously id invaded because it's about the mind, and like that's why. Yeah, so obviously when he dives into these minds, they're also like very abstract, and you know, like the way that they work is not necessarily the way that like a normal, like the world, the real world works. So it's not straightforward, like, oh, that's you know, that's how this happened, etc. Like, it's the way the mind kind of scrambles things around.
And yeah, so like there's the guy in that world like trying to piece together how this world works and how he can get clues, and then there's the team outside that is like essentially watching him and using the clues that he picks up from these worlds to then track down clues, evidence, and suspects in the real world.
And then there's also real world, like, on the ground detectives who go out into the real world, who are like using the information that this group has gathered to like actually find, track people down in real. And so there's like kind of three levels of police slash detectives kind of working in tandem to make things happen. And then there's, so like I said, they're trying to track down serial killers. And the big thing is like, there seems to be kind of this, I don't know, like OP serial killer, whatever, like the OG, like he's this one that seems to like maybe make other serial killers. And so that's when they dive into serial killers' brains, they're also getting clues about this other figure, besides also trying to track down, you know, the victims and the serial killer that they're at, that they're currently looking for.
Do you not remember his name, or are you just deliberately not saying it?
I don't remember it.
I assumed that you would remember his name just from the amount of jokes we made about
him. I don't remember. What is it?
Johnny Walker?
Oh, yes! No, John Walker. Yeah. We were making jokes about it being Johnny Walker. That's right. Totally forgot that. Yeah, and so there's also, so the other kind of piece to the story is our detective, the greatest detective, he is in jail. So he helps them out, you know, he's doing this thing, he's agreed to do it, but he has also like this whole story that we are piecing together about his past and like his family and what he did to get thrown in jail. And also, he's also in jail with the serial killers, and so there, I don't want to say too much about kind of what happens with that, but also there's like another element that's very mysterious and sort of the way that he's interacting with them, I think is impossible. Like, I don't know. Anyway, I don't want to speculate too much about it because I don't want to give away too much of, like, what's happening in later episodes. But it's all really interesting.
It's interesting because in many ways, he's almost like two separate characters because there's, because he like gets reset every time he goes in, there's kind of him in the ID world, in the id world, and then there's him back in the real world, and they're almost like two separate characters that may have an influence on each other.
That's a good point. And I also feel like, but I also feel like they're almost like the id character, or the, you know, when he's in the id, it's like he doesn't have all of the baggage and the memories. Mm. So it's like he's able to be kind of like his previous, almost like his previous self in a some sort of way. I don't know. Like, he's almost like a prime version of himself versus like the, you know, kind of the, or like the before and the after or something.
Yeah,
like
I feel like this hints that that line that they think is immutable is less so. And I think one of the questions will be who is having a greater influence on the other one. So that should be an interesting thing to see.
And one other element I forgot to mention is every time he dives, no matter who he dives into, this one dead girl always appears. And so there's like a mysterious dead girl. And they don't know like who she is or like what the factor is that like makes her show up every time. So yeah, there's just like a lot of really interesting mysteries. I feel like the technology and the way that it works is super fascinating. As Al said, it's science fantasy, not hard science.
Yeah, it's definitely a like borderline magic device, especially with some of it, but it's there to explore more about the human mind and how we compartmentalize things, and like it's more of a look at the psychology of humans through a scientific device than how a realistic scientific device would affect society. It's that kind of science fiction.
Yeah, and it's just, I think it's like super fascinating. It's super visually very interesting because of like the id sequences. It's got people trying to catch serial killers. I'm like so there for that. I mean, yeah, I feel like this is feeling really good. Oh, also the main guy has like a super good voice. So yeah, I just feel like it's all really interesting, and I'm very curious to know how the one officer who, she seems a little bit different than the other people on the cases, and like how she's going to sort of factor into like the investigations going forward.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's just like a lot to chew on in every episode and kind of make you speculate and wonder.
Yeah, it's definitely a show that has like, it's a very multi-tiered mystery, so it'll be interesting to see how they pull that off.
I guess that's going to be a big factor. You know, obviously endings always matter, but I feel like this one is, it's got to nail the landing a bit.
Yeah, no, definitely. I didn't want to go into it too much, but yeah, it does feel like when you hold back so much information, a lot of this depends on how cool or cheap the reveals feel when they hit.
And this is an original, which is very exciting. I think that always gets me, you know, like really interested. And I feel like there's no reason they can't do it. I just think that there's a lot of interesting meaty things happening, and just like how all of those things play out, I think is really gonna matter. It's not gonna be able to like skate by.
It's a cool show, but yeah, a lot of like the overall cool, how much substance it has as opposed to just cool ideas and visuals is really going to come down to those big reveals at the end.
I'm glad we got to end with two detective shows, and there's like two or three detective shows in the next season. I don't know. I don't know if we're like entering, I don't want to say we're entering like a golden age of detective anime, but it's looking pretty good. I mean, you know, it's very exciting.
And we had that Sherlock one last season.
So. Yeah, which we're still watching. So, like, yeah, I'm like feeling pretty good about the detective offerings lately. So that's it for this month's podcast. Much shorter than previous months. So that way, you know, we can fluctuate. We can go all over the place.
Hey, guys. Do you think there was any show that wasn't on this list that we should watch? As always, there's no guarantee that we will watch any show you recommend, because I will not make that promise, because I know if I do, people will try to be friggin' social assassins and send the worst of the worst at us. But if you are not a horrible monster and think there was an actual show that we would like that we missed, please tell us.
And don't say Doro Hey Doro, because like we can't. It has to be legally streaming for us, so like that's not. We definitely would have watched that if we had it available. So like, I feel like there's some that like I understand that we should be, and we will, but not yet. So, but yeah, anything else like kind of under the radar stuff, like I would be very interested to hear.